the pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We're back, second half of the program live here. We'll talk to Matt Stinchcomb in a couple of minutes. Let's get right back to the calls. And Bo is up next in Georgia. Hey, Bo.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, Mr. Goodtree.
Well, thank you very much.
I have a couple things. First of all, for this guy who called about Georgia questioning the credentials, I'll just say this. They've won 28 straight, two national championships. Could be going there again this year, so case closed there. The second thing is, here towards the end of the season, the cream always rises to the top. And I'm just talking about the SEC now. You got Alabama and Georgia back up there, winning their divisions, go to the SEC playoffs. They'll go there. And the winner probably go to the playoffs. And I'm just saying that you got great coaches and you got great talent. Success begets success. So you're going to have really good players going to those teams. The best talent is going to go to those teams that win a lot and, you know, graduate some to the NFL. But as long as they attract that top talent and probably money, it just makes it tougher. And nothing against the other teams, Ole Miss or Tennessee or anything, but it just makes it tougher for them to recruit elite players. And I know that Texas and Oklahoma are coming in there next year. But so what does that mean long-term in the SEC conference? If you instead of being dominated, is there going to be some kind of equalization out there on down the road?
Well, I think it's entirely possible. You could be right. The one thing about Oklahoma and Texas, and we were so nervous about how would they be ready, or would they be SEC ready? Well, the answer is they are. Texas has had a phenomenal season. Oklahoma's had a good season, but much better than a year ago, and they won the most important game they had to win. Thank you for the call, and Randall is up next in Birmingham.
Hey, Randall. And nothing against the other teams.
Okay, Randall, go right ahead.
But it just makes it tougher for them to...
Okay, we're going to have to get somebody that can... Eddie is in Pensacola. Hey, Eddie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much.
Paul, you always hang up on me before I get to ask my second question. So for Thanksgiving, I want one thing. Let me ask two questions.
Sure, whatever you want.
My first question is, and I'm going to make a statement before the question, and this is just my personal belief, but I get to share it. I think Ohio State, Oregon, the winner of the SEC championship, and you know, I don't think Florida State belongs in the playoffs. I think Washington would beat Florida State every time. But I don't want to put Washington in. But if Alabama, and I don't know that they will, and I'm an Alabama fan, if they beat Georgia, does an SEC team get left out of the playoffs?
I mean, it's possible. I hate to get too exercised about that yet because there are still a number of scenarios out there. So I am concerned but not apoplectic.
And my second most important question, Paul, with all of the coaching availability that's coming up, is anybody going to look at that old man at New Mexico State as one of the best coaches I've ever watched coach a football game?
Well, I think they appreciate Jerry Kill, but he's had some serious illnesses, which affected his job at Minnesota. And I think he's probably quite content to stay where he is.
He did an amazing job, Paul. Last thing real quick. Do you think Freeze survives if Alabama blows Auburn out?
Yes. Hugh Freeze has done a very good job of turning Auburn around. I think last week was an outlier. It happens when you have a young program, when you're trying to instill a different approach. I mean, really interested to talk to Hugh this week because we haven't talked to him in a while, but he does look exhausted, does he not? I mean, I wonder if Hugh has found the SEC to be a lot different than it was when he left, but Hugh Freeze's job is probably the last thing on anyone's list of concerns. We move along, and how about Mitch in Jacksonville? Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Paul, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you very much.
Am I missing something, Paul? You know, naturally, we got Georgia and Alabama. Watching game day, they're coming across with all of these scenarios, and pretty much in every scenario, they got Alabama beating Georgia. Well, I'm a dog fan. My wife is an Alabama fan, so it's been a lot of fun. I was actually sitting in the stands in Tampa watching that game, Alabama and South Florida, telling the Alabama fans around me how stupid Nick was for keeping Milroe on the sidelines. But that's where I'm going with this, okay? Now that they've decided Alabama and Georgia, so many people think Alabama's the team that's going to beat Georgia. In doing so, all I've heard is, you know, naturally with Brock going out, we've heard name after name after name, weapon after weapon for Carson. But when they're talking about Alabama, Paul, I'm only hearing one name. I mean, like I said, my wife is an Alabama fan. I've had to put up with it for so many years. But the only damn name I'm hearing is Milroe. Can Milroe beat all them weapons that Carson Beck's got? All these people that think that Alabama's going to beat Georgia?
Milroe can't do anything, but I think you're talking about an elite defense that could being the operative word here.
Okay. But are we leaving Georgia's defense out?
No, I'm not talking about Georgia. I'm just talking about what Alabama has. I mean, Alabama's defense, if Alabama beats Georgia, it's because their defense was able to slow Georgia down and Milroe was able to hit some bombs that are very difficult to do against an equally elite defense.
A very good secondary, Paul. I still don't think we've got a receiver that's got 100 yards. So them bombs better come. It's going to be the last chance of the year. I think what we've had over the last 3 or 4 weeks, Paul, is all these people, including a bunch of them in the committee, that have been wishing that they could come across a Sunday or I should say Wednesday now because they do the selections on Tuesday night. But they've been wanting to say, I told you so bad for so long with Georgia. And guess what, Paul? It ain't happening. It ain't happened. And it ain't going to happen. So for all your regular callers, Larry and Legend and I-Man, fellas, have another cocktail because it ain't going to happen. Dogs on the three-peat. Roof, roof. Go, dogs.
Love a man who barks in the afternoon. What about it, AC?
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum, happy Thanksgiving to you and your team. How you feeling, man? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I hope you and your wife enjoy a beautiful Thanksgiving dinner, et cetera, et cetera. Hey, Mr. Feinbaum, let me ask you a question. What's your favorite dinner on Thanksgiving, sir?
My favorite part of Thanksgiving is the stuffing.
Good. So I guess for that day, rest in peace diet. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'll go off the Weight Watchers diet for one day.
Of course. I mean, you're fat Americans that stock up like
really.
No tomorrow. I'm sorry?
I said, not for one day, but for one side at the meal.
That's great. Hey, I know the hype is going on. It feels like the hype.
A smoothie, a kale salad, and some stuffing.
I love it. I'm going to follow that diet.
Hey,
so
hey, what about you?
What do you do on
Thanksgiving other than what do you do?
I'm a practicing Muslim, so I don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I told you this. I mean, why? This is the second time you asked me this question.
It's not like I can remember. I guess I should be able to remember the people that don't celebrate Thanksgiving because I think you're the only one.
You're sure? I mean, you got to follow your practice, right?
You can follow whatever you want, but we're heading to a break right now. We're back with much more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back here on a Tuesday, and let's check in with Augie up next.
Paul, you weren't lying. You really hit the minibar at the office celebration, didn't you? You were happy and giddy.
I mean, I know everybody else was hesitant, and I just said, why not? Nobody's going to notice if I'm intoxicated on the air.
Well, you were very happy, very loose, very jovial. You didn't come on with a little scowl. You were
none
like
of the cranky, unusual stuff, right?
No, none of that. None of that. And you just gave BK a severe case of the drizzling trots. You know why?
Why's that?
You predicted he would meet Notre Dame in a bowl game. Can you imagine that?
That would be classic.
Because you know that the only way we're going to beat Notre Dame in a bowl game is if Jaden Daniels is still Superman and scores like 60 points, because we can't stop a baby's runny nose. That's how bad our defense is. And it's good to – I have not heard Harry in like years. Has he called in lately?
Other than today? Twice.
I thought he was in Metairie Lawn Cemetery. So that's good news that Harry is still around. Harry is right, though, Paul, and you know, because you know SEC history. LSU's biggest rival was always Tulane. And you know, Tulane in the 30s, they got one of the best teams in the country. Best teams in the country. And they would beat LSU on a regular basis. And then things started changing in the 50s. And we did go to those games where they would play every year at the end of the year. And those games, you'd see lots of altercations in the stands. So I don't want to see Tulane in a bowl game either. But, Paul, this year the narrative for Alabama football started out at the beginning of the year is, Paul, who's going to be our quarterback? So play the first couple of games. They hit Tennessee. Then it's, Paul, Milroe ain't a good quarterback. We need a new quarterback. So then they play South Florida. Paul, Saban has lost it. He's lost his team. Saban's got to go. Who's going to be our next coach? Then things turn around a little bit. They beat Ole Miss. Well, Paul, we got a great defense. Then they beat LSU. Paul, Milroe's the greatest quarterback in Alabama history. We're going all the way. And then last week they run over poor Chattanooga. Paul, we need to be in the college football playoffs. Even if we got one loss, we're the most improved team in the nation. Is that not a concise narrative of Alabama football this season?
The court will accept that ruling.
And you say LSU fans are fickle, but Paul, who would you say is the most sophisticated in terms of personal likes and personal preferences of the finer things in life, the most sophisticated coach in the SEC? Somebody who would appreciate a glass of good wine, maybe the theater. I mean, it's not going to be Sam Pittman, so we take him right off the list. Pittman's probably.
Okay, so it would be easier to eliminate people than I'm eliminating Shane Beamer, okay?
Shane Beamer gets his kicks by taunting kids. So
yeah, I mean, Shane Beamer would be perfect playing Santa Claus. So
Sam Pittman.
I'm going to throw four or five names up, and then we'll zero in. Okay, we only have I think Kiffin could be in that group.
Possibly, but
I think BK could be in that group.
I would say BK. Yeah.
By the way, when it comes to wine or fine bourbon, I might even put Mark Stoops in the group. I know you don't know, but I've talked to him about it. He's maybe a little more sophisticated drinker than maybe he is play caller. Mm-hmm. I don't think Saban drinks, so I'm not going to put him in there.
Well, as far as the finer things, what do you think Saban's idea of a good Saturday night is? Just hanging around the house?
Yeah, Saban is, and I don't want to act like I know that much, even though I've been to his home a couple of times. Saban is a very grounded guy. He's not, he can have fun, but I don't see Saban doing a lot of partying.
So who would you say is like the theater district man in the SEC? You've narrowed two names. You said Kiffin and BK.
So are you granting me that we're going to leave Eli in or out of this conversation?
Look, Drinkwitz, to me, he likes to spend his Saturday nights playing video games. He looks like he's 14 years old, and that's what turns him on.
Okay, well, who are we? Kirby, I don't see Kirby being patient enough for fine wine.
No. Kirby, that's not his thing, no. I don't see that either.
I'm just going to throw some names out. Napier.
Not Napier. Napier's more...
I have no idea what Napier would be like to hang out with.
It looks like he would just want to be in his garage taking apart a carburetor.
I think Napier likes to fix transistor radios from World War II.
There you go.
who else we have?
We kind of run out. I don't know. The guy at Vanderbilt. What about him?
One more name. Josh Heupel.
Oh, no. He's another one. He'd be turkey hunting in the stand.
Randy just came up with a guy I think might fit the bill. Clark Lee.
That's what I was thinking.
I was forgetting he was still coaching. I'm sorry.
We forget about Vanderbilt.
What's that? I think Kiffin could be pretty – Kiffin's a fairly erudite guy.
I think so. But, again, I think he's more distracted. He's the kind of guy who's like a 15-year-old kid who can't
stay off the TikTok. Kiffin would be he would be too busy looking around. And I'm landing on Brian Kelly.
I am, too. Now, look, I'm his biggest critic, but I got to give the guy props that he seems like he's a pretty sophisticated guy and that he appreciates the finer things. And I did not see him having a good time spending a weekend at a – hog hunting camp in Texas with Pittman and
it's a funny story. I everybody I know hunts, but Tommy Tuberville once asked me, he said, do you like to duck hunt? And I said no. He said, oh, it's too bad. He said, we're all going to Arkansas, the most famous duck hunting blind. I said, well, thank you, call me and tell me how it went. You ever been duck hunting?
Yes.
Is it
me? I've never been.
Is it as wet as it feels like? Yeah, cold and miserable is not my idea of a good time.
Oh, well. Anyway, Paul, I think you need a refreshment.
Augie, I swear, because I know Pittman fairly well. I've been around he and Jamie, his wife. You would have fun with him, though. I tell you a guy who would have fit the bill about 8 years ago, and I have been out with him for a very long night, and that was Brett Bielema.
Oh, yeah. He's an eccentric kind of guy.
This guy liked to party.
Yeah.
Booger McFarland, Joe Tessitore, and I went out with him one night in Connecticut.
Oh, wow.
And to say that we shut the place down would be a dramatic. We kept it open for an extra 2 hours.
Oh, wow. Wish I could have been there. Paul, get yourself a refreshment.
It was pretty funny.
Hour.
If I ever see you, Augie, I'll tell you some of the stories from that night. We take a break. Matt Stinchcomb will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Stinchcomb joining us as we get ready for the final week of the regular season.
Happened fast, didn't it? What a ride.
People say that. Can't believe where the season's going, but I bet somebody like you who's doing games every Saturday and trying to find a way back probably doesn't agree with that.
Well, I will say that. So I missed 2 weeks, I want to say, asked off for a volleyball tournament for my daughter. And so, I mean, you get a little break in the middle and all of a
That's
sudden.
Very commendable, by the way.
Thank you very much. Well, I mean, she's only got so many of them in there. So it does
I mean, so
you're, seem.
What game did you miss?
Can't remember. Auburn Vandy. I think it was. So, you know.
I'm not laughing. I'm just thinking, you know. You have a time to bond with your daughter, have a special experience, mm-hmm. or sit there and talk about Auburn and Vandy.
I could have. And I think I chose well.
I appreciate that.
I think it worked out okay.
Because I think about all the things that I haven't done, and you start to regret them.
Do you?
I think about like all those times that I would tell my wife, I said, I've got to go by the, when I was a sports writer, yeah. I've got to go by that locker room and, you know, get some extra quotes from the players.
Quotes from these meatheads.
You know, get home and there was like nothing.
Oh, yeah, like chicken wings?
Yeah, yeah.
What were you thinking when he kicked that field goal? Oh, man. Man, pork rinds. I'm sorry, what? That story writes itself.
I think of those late nights. I'm like, oh, what did I gain from all that?
I don't know, man.
That was more than my sports writing career.
Okay, yeah, but now
I wouldn't miss a SEC Nation.
Kidding me? Return on investment?
My life depended on it.
Careful. That's big talk now.
Yeah,
there's people listening to this show right
left.
Now. Whatever. Somebody just heard that and they said, you know,
where are you off to this weekend? You got a big game, don't you?
I do have a big game. Yeah. South Carolina hosting Clemson. If that rivalry game has ever meant more to
That's
two programs,
game.
It is to those two programs. Yeah. They're both kind of, you know, South Carolina, I think, is known, but they're battling for bowl eligibility. Yeah. Couldn't come at a bigger game for them, but we all know that for both of those schools, most seasons,
Especially after last year.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, do you think Clemson's amped up for this?
And, you know, Dabo's, I don't want to ruin your meeting with him Friday, but I mean, he really thinks he's accomplished something by only losing four games this year.
Well, if you listen to the press conferences,
yeah,
I mean, he
is one happy-go-lucky, talkative guy.
Yeah, well, we'll see how the call goes. I mean, it's you never know. I will say, you never know what you're going to get in these coaches' calls. You really.
So what are they like when you either meet with them or talk? You talk to them during the week, don't you?
Yes.
And then you try to meet with them on Friday or?
You try to bump into them on the field and yeah. Maybe they actually tell you something that really matters because by then, you know, who cares? But the hard part is, like, you talk to them on a Wednesday. You know, they're still not done baking the cake. I mean, there's still stuff to be figured out. And so they tell you some things, but they don't know everything. You meet with them on Friday, they could tell you everything that you could ever want to know.
Do they ever tell you any, do they go, listen, we're going to do this, that, and that, or in the, I mean, they used to.
Oh, yeah. The only guy that ever really did that was Charlie Weiss when he was a head coach at Kansas. And he's like, so what do you want to know? You want to know what we're going to do? You want to know what we're going to start the game with? We hadn't even responded to the first question, but sure, go ahead. And he told us. And it was he threw a go ball off a heavy play action. And he says, you know what I'm going to come back to do after that? We're going to throw another one. And doggone if he didn't do both. And we're just going, wow, nobody does that anymore. They don't tell you. Now, that once you get down there on the game, on the field.
They will.
They'll absolutely tell you. You know, we had A&M in a bowl game however many years ago now, I can't remember. And Jimbo told us, he's like, we got this kid. He's played wide receiver a little bit for us all year. He might be our best running back. It was an Ismith. He said, they're going, this guy. And he went out and he played really well versus Oklahoma State that day. And, you know, so then we had a good idea to maybe pop him in the open or something. So that comes in handy. But otherwise, they don't tell you much. That's for sure.
Who's the worst? Never mind.
Hey, I'll tell you who the worst was. And I'll say it because I've told him a million times. Chiz was one of the worst.
That's funny.
Oh, man. But he was strategically bad. I mean, he did it on purpose. And I get it. He was like, look, man. I got a million things to do.
I think he
just wanted to end it. And so the more bland he was very – he was not discouraged. Some guys are jerks.
Who's the biggest jerk?
God, what was the guy's name?
It's been a fun interview so far.
No, he was a D coordinator for Texas A&M under Kevin Sumlin. He didn't last long. He was a full-blown jerk.
Really?
I mean,
you guys are not trying to mine anything.
Yeah, there's no
– we're just trying to get an idea, right?
Yeah, what do you think we're going to do? We're going to turn around, like, sell it to the other team or something? You could do that once, maybe, and then you're done. God, what was his name? He was a real jerk.
We'll
he must have been having a bad day that day.
And by being a jerk.
Just dismissing the questions, and it's almost like patting you on the head.
But you're asking fairly boilerplate stuff, aren't you?
Sometimes you try to get – to me, I don't think it makes sense to get crazy jargony because folks at home aren't going to care.
Yeah.
You know, so if I'm sitting here and we're talking about, you know, whatever it is, if you're going to drink – if you're in full slide and they bring four strong, you know, what's your adjustment? No, everybody at home is just like, I'm going to go get some more nachos. They're not going to sit there and go, oh, I can't wait to hear the four strong strategy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't get crazy deep on that, right? It's, you know, what matchups do you think? What about the way that they're, how active they are on third down? Or have you seen, you know, the personnel change that they make inside? Or, you know, are they going to have a corner follow your best receiver around? That kind of stuff. Nothing that's like earth-shattering. Well, you know, we're just going to have to see. We're just going to have to find out.
So we're going through the DCs. There was a Banks, Chavis.
Nope.
He had a lot of coordinators.
No. You got to go all the way back. It was like year one.
Snyder.
Who?
Mark Snyder.
Yep.
Mark Snyder.
Yep. He was such a jerk. He might not be a jerk, but in that meeting.
What's Mark Snyder doing right now other than watching us?
I don't know. Hey, if he's watching here, he knows. I mean, if he's. I know it. I'm pretty sure it did not make a big impact on his life. That he was like, you know what? I was a real jerk to these guys before the SMU game.
He's in the XFL.
Okay. Well, hey, there you go. That works.
You don't do XFL, do you?
No, I don't think I'm going to be on those games. But I suppose I could. Maybe he could explain to me the screen game SMU was going to run. Yeah. Well, hey, man, all I want to know is, like, so what are your thoughts? They run a bunch of screens. Yeah, that maybe
really matters.
I don't explain anything, I suppose. But
do you ever get the? Well, you're a Georgia guy. I'm not telling you anything.
Oh, you know what? I got that. Who hit me with that? No, it wasn't that I was a Georgia guy. It actually wasn't that I was a Georgia guy because we weren't doing a Georgia game. I actually have never gotten that. I have gotten. We did a Georgia Tech BYU game, and at BYU, beautiful. Setting. I mean, that stadium is unbelievable where it's at, but it was an odd place to be. This was before the SEC Network. And Paul Johnson, before he answered any of the questions that I had for him, he basically went on a soliloquy about the difference between the two programs and had a few cup checks for me for the fact that I went to the University of Georgia, which, you know, look, Paul Johnson's a kind of a prickly guy, the former head coach at Georgia Tech, right? Was it Navy?
Prickly.
Okay. Lee. Yep. No, I enunciated the end of that one. I really like Coach Joe. And people are like, are you crazy?
Him.
I like him. I mean, he's very much just who he is.
Yeah.
And I think he's a brilliant coach, I mean, to run that system. But he did make it a point, you know, because he never came out and said, because you're a Georgia guy, because I'm like, what's this got to do with BYU and the price of tea in China? Nothing other than
what you do with your profession, I never understood why that matters. But I understand from fans, but from coaches.
Yeah, and but I will say he never. I didn't feel like he didn't give me any answers. But I've actually heard there. I've seen coaches do that with like sideline reporters and others, where it's like, well, I'm not going to tell you anything. And half the time you think, I think that they're kidding, but maybe they aren't. Maybe there's a kernel of truth in there.
I think I don't forget it, but I mean these are coaches, and the coaches have. Very finite personalities.
They very much
and
do.
They,
I think you can almost see, I don't know if you've observed this, but these coaches, they're asked to wear so much, especially these head coaches, they have to do 10 different things. They have to do them almost all at once, but they don't. So you can almost see them shift from coach mode to media mode, to colleague mode, to recruiting mode, to you're a booster mode, to whatever, staff, admin, and it's, click, click, click. And so in their defense, I mean, you think you almost – it's almost like with what Chiz was doing, because you're like, in no way is he like how he was in those meetings, which was cordial but short, strategically short.
Well, I think if you go back in time, Friday used to be an easy day, but now it's overloaded.
That's a good point. That's a great point. And they've got all these – you know, you're coordinating, you know, who's going to be in town and who's going to take who out.
I once made the mistake of misunderstanding Spurrier one time, and I said, you know, he tries to get 9 holes in on Friday. He said, that's not what I said. I said, what did you say? So I'll do that on the bye week.
Just the bye week.
I believe he did it. Like if Florida was playing Georgia State, he played 9.
I bet he did.
But you didn't have the recruiting. You didn't have the NIL meetings to go to. So there was time. Friday was always a great day. When I was early in my career, you go by, walk through the offices. Those guys really
shuck and grin.
They got
with
in
those
late.
Guys.
It was just a laid back day.
Well, now it's just, and you see it where, I don't even know. It got to where it was recruiting was so heavy. We got to get out and strategically, you're going to see this high school and this one, this one, and whatever town we're in. And now, I don't even know if it works quite that way because partly you have to deal with text messages from the current roster and, hey, coach, you know, am I going to get time tomorrow? And, you know, what's the rotation?
We've seen Kirby a couple of times on Friday over in Athens, and he looks like he's on a second schedule. Like, there's like,
As soon as he sits down, he's getting ready to leave.
Yeah, no.
I mean, and it's like he is like that to where you can tell, I'll answer your questions. There ain't going to be a whole lot of tap dancing around. I'm not here to, you know.
No, it's so important now. And he's always gracious. What's interesting is after, you know, before he always talks, he always like says something. He sticks around. He likes the, once the camera goes off, chatter.
Yeah.
Because he knows that I've cut it by 4 minutes, so he has an extra 4 minutes. So he might actually say something substantive, but no, he's one of those that the clock is ticking.
I'll say one of the things that was most interesting, we used to do that film room show.
Yeah.
So that was a real, you walk in there,
yeah.
And this is at Alabama, so we're doing it, and you would think people in that building are wound so tight. It's like, well, coach is going to come in. When coach comes in, you got to be ready to go, and that light's got to come on. You're like, oh, okay, wow. Well, it's a very tight schedule. So he comes in, sits down. This is the first year I did it. I am puckered because I'm like, okay, we got one take on this whole thing.
Right.
And before we even, so I'm going to go right into it. And he's like, well, I'd like to see the plays. I'm sorry, coach, what? I'd like to see the plays. He's super understated. Well, okay. And we watched every single one of those plays first. He wanted to see what we were going to see him, which was time consuming. And the whole time I'm kind of telling him, you know, this is kind of what I was thinking. He doesn't say a word. And I am stress sweating because I'm going, is this going as horribly as it feels like it is? And what he was doing was listening. And he, I'm convinced, would have sat in there all day and talked about actual football. And it would ended up being, you know, the handlers, SID that's there was like, hey, coach, we got to wrap it up. You've got 20 other things to go do. He wasn't eager to get out of there. He was happy to stay in there and talk.
He's one of those guys that when he doesn't want to do something, I mean, I ran into him at a reception one night. It was like the Bryant Coach of the Year Award. And I was like standing in the back of the, this was right after a year after he got there. And he did not want to talk to all these people and take pictures. So he literally backed me into the corner so nobody could see him. And we talked for 30 minutes. And I'm like, coach, like, I don't want to leave here. I mean, I don't really like you that much, but I like you
better than the rest of the room.
Yeah. Because, I mean, just it's annoying. I mean, these coaches, that drives them crazy.
They would have to get worn out. I mean,
he was vulnerable. It's not like he had somewhere else to go. He was stuck. You've been at these banquets.
I have, but I've never had that problem, right? Nothing to the extent that these guys are dealing with, right? That's it. Well, man, that's some good face time. 30 solid minutes of who knows what.
But it's not like we talked about the weather either. He said, I'll tell you what you guys in the media need to get on. And he went down, he was talking about, this was back in 09 or 10, something, you know, he was already on the speed of play. He delivered a lecture to me about all the things that we media boys need to rectify. He did not waste a second. That's you know that being with him.
Oh yeah, intentional.
Genius of Nick Saban that he doesn't waste time. There's always a message, even if it's impromptu.
Yes. Well, and that's why, you know, whenever like even that instance where he's like, I'd like to see the plays, and I thought, golly, we just got done hearing about, hey, he walks in here, we crank it up. But he had a reason for doing it. Yeah. He wanted to know so I can speak. And then when we got done, and that was a fun show to do because you get those coaches, they're talking, it's almost like a film room. That was the intent. But afterwards, he was one of the few coaches that said, did you get what you needed?
Wow.
Most of them, it's just like, and they're like, again,
they're cordial. I've always thought with Coach Saban, he's not the problem. It's the handlers.
Could be.
Because he enjoys talking football, but they just are so, they're so scared of him. Is this on TV?
Yeah, it's on TV and radio, as I understand.
Yeah. They're so scared of him that they overprotect.
They may. I know this, that it seemed like in that setting that he would have talked ball for – it wasn't me. It could have been anybody. That this subject matter, I'll tell you all you
I make this mistake with you all the time. I literally forget where we are. And I had a list of things here I needed to ask you, so I'll email them to you.
Okay, do that.
And you can answer them next week.
Sure. Okay.
Matt Stinchcomb here on a Tuesday afternoon. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
About this lineup, we start with LSU hosting A&M. Critical game for LSU to try to get to 10 wins, as BK told us the other day. Vandy in Tennessee. We just talked about Clemson and South Carolina with Matt. That's a big one. We are going to get back to the calls here after we went a little bit long there, but that's okay. I always enjoy talking to Matt. Kelly is on Long Island.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Kelly.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Glad to hear
Chemo's going good. Got one more session in December.
That is great news.
And hopefully there'll be good news.
Well.
And I'm feeling okay.
That is fantastic.
So it's interesting. Thank you. And happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
Thank you very much.
How do you think the scenario goes if Alabama loses? Does this bolster Florida State for winning out? I know that you're not a big fan of them. I am a Seminole fan, but I agree with your assessment that their schedule has been a little bit soft. However, they don't choose it. Just as
no,
I
listen,
feel
I,
that
I understand that.
Schedule.
Before yeah. anybody from Tallahassee just starts, you know, doing the war chant for my death.
I know. Well, that I can't.
I like Mike Norvell a great deal, but he's a victim of his schedule, and
yeah.
The Boston College game was ugly.
It was.
It's and Clemson just doesn't help very much because Clemson is a
because that was a close
team.
Win.
Yeah.
Had it been a blowout, I think it would have
right.
helped them a little bit more. But I can't see Alabama leapfrogging to number four if they win Georgia. I don't see that.
Well, it's the most interesting situation, but the argument will be they have the best win of the year. Although if
that's
Ohio,
true.
The best win that
if
matters.
Ohio, unless
that
Ohio
way.
State beats Michigan. If Ohio State beats Michigan,
if Ohio State beats Michigan, that win doesn't matter any longer because they're already in. So
yeah, that's true.
Of the teams on the bubble, they have the win that matters. Yeah, that's the best win. Alabama will have the second best win.
Right.
But it matters.
I mean, I agree.
But Florida State doesn't
Florida
have
means
Florida State over Louisville doesn't. It's not in the same neighborhood.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.